like to comment?
Yeah.
And while you're commenting, perhaps you could comment on Ernest Gellner as well.
Well, to start with what Maurice just said, I mean, you know, I hope that what you were saying in your Malinowski lecture was what you just now said you were saying, but it did seem to me that entire times in that lecture you rather gave the impression, you know, social structure is something that, you know, you sort of go off into the desert, you know, sometimes a month, like Dirk Heine and Australian Aborigines and do a bit of that, come back and go on doing real practical life. And, you know, the point I wanted to make was that the rituals very often around the pragmatic behaviour rather than being separated from it. And I do think that, I mean, it was very difficult to speculate about how people thought in Athens, because, as you say, we only get one side of the question. But it does seem to me rather doubtful whether there was a sort of articulated democratic view which put together what was happening in the empire and the assembly with what was happening in the market. I think that the demos consciousness was connecting these things perfectly well in the sense of how they voted, but that most of the time probably the conventions of how you expressed things in the assembly were maintained as the convention that one talked about the interests of the city rather than the interests of individuals, and that one attacked one's opponents for thinking only about their own interests were kept up. So, you know, I mean, I'm not denying that people can derive from their pragmatic interests a sort of practical understanding of how society works, but they may not get to theorising it if their experience is structured in a way which blocks the theorising. What I'd really like to take up now, I think, both out of Professor Gellner's and Ray Samuel's comments, is this question of situational logic and how one interprets people's interests, whether talking in terms of the interests and perceptions of individuals forces one to think very much in terms of practical interests. Because when I was picking up this notion of situational logic, I certainly didn't mean to be accepting the sort of transactionalist view of that, namely, you know, which I think is completely, I mean, you know, either false or tautological. If you once start saying that people are always aiming to, or that all behaviour is intentional and aimed at getting some kind of advantage from it, then either you define advantage in such a way that it's tautological, or else you define it in such a way that it's false. And what I meant by situational logic is much more the kind of thing that Weber talks about when he talks about the four kinds of rationally understandable action, means to an end, standing by ultimate values, custom or emotional reaction. I think any of these can come under situational logic and do. And this is the kind of, I mean, and I would have said that historians were, on the whole, trained to use the notion in that rather flexible way, and I was a bit surprised that Ray thought that they tended to reduce individual interest and consciousness very much to material interest. I mean, I was taking it that one did build in as much understanding of the culture and the values of that culture and the kind of meanings and experience and perceptions that people would be likely to have in particular positions in it as one could reconstruct, which makes the theory in a sense rather meaningless. I mean, it doesn't tell you very much about what kind of interest, what kind of answer you're going to come up with. I mean, it just says that really the only way you can understand, you can explain people's behaviour is by trying to put yourself in their place and get as concrete an idea as you can of what would be likely to be going on in their heads, and then see if you can make sense of the thing. it doesn't get you very far, but it does seem to me what historians basically do.
Discussion is now wide open. Jack Goodin.